What we're hearing is more that the cost of living is one of the biggest challenges. Cost of rents. Rents are rising in Jackson.
From Wyoming Public Media, this is The Modern West. I'm Micah Schweitzer. Here in the West, populations and housing prices are on the rise. Overall, more and more people are moving to the Mountain West. And coming up, we'll hear about some of the challenges that's causing for affordable housing. Montana, Colorado, and Utah are all seeing unprecedented population growth. In fact, Idaho is currently the fastest growing state in the nation. But that's not the case here in Wyoming, where the population is actually shrinking. Wyoming Public Radio's Maggie Mullen explores why.
Elsa Frohlicker grew up in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
I think Wyoming has a very small town feel, which I adore. I love it.
But Frohlicker wants to see more of the world. So when she graduates from the University of Wyoming this May, she'll be going to grad school somewhere else.
It's between University of Puget Sound, which is in Tacoma, Washington, and University of New Mexico, which is in Albuquerque.
An estimated 60% of young people like Frohlicker take their degree and leave the state. Brandon Checkey is another student who plans on checking out. He's about to finish his master's in accounting and will move to Omaha, Nebraska. It will be the biggest city he's ever lived in.
I think the mystery of it all is actually what I'm more interested in.
That, and there's a job waiting for him with Union Pacific, the second largest railroad system in the country. Checkey got the position through a college job fair. He says the benefits first got his attention, but it was the amenities in Omaha that sealed the deal.
And they have a lot more stuff that just goes on. They have a theater in downtown Omaha, and I think they have like a world-famous zoo and aquarium.
Still, kids itching to leave their hometowns isn't unique to Wyoming, especially in other rural states. So what else is going on? Samuel Western is a Wyoming author and cultural critic. He says Wyoming's problem has everything to do with its resource economy and the boom and bust cycle.
Traditionally, Wyoming has been contra-cyclical. That means that when commodity prices are high, people come in, and when they're low, they leave.
But that's not unique to Wyoming either. Other states have faced that reality. He says what is unique to Wyoming is how it's dealt with that reality.
We've just kicked the can down the road.
On the other hand, he says states with similar economies have realized that people and their ideas are better than natural resources at bringing in wealth, and they've diversified. Wyoming, he says, is just starting to get that. Governor Matt Mead recently introduced an initiative mandating economic diversity.
The fact that we are talking about it, that it's in print, that means we have to have people come into the state right now in order for me to make it work, is a fairly novel concept.
So how do you get people to come back? One way is the state program Wyoming Grown. Haley McKee helped launch the program.
We knew that we needed to look at folks who were familiar with Wyoming and familiar with the Rocky Mountain region, love the outdoors.
One of their strategies in luring young Wyomingites back is flattery. A friend or a family member who still lives in the state nominates someone who's left. That person then gets a letter from the governor asking them to come home. McKee thinks that's a powerful tool.
Governor Mead wants me to come back to Wyoming, and it makes them feel special.
But even if they don't come back straight away, McKee counts on them coming home eventually, something Frohlicker is already planning.
I would love to come back to Wyoming ultimately and raise my family here and spend the rest of my life here, for sure.
But again, college grads coming back to their rural states or small hometowns isn't unique to Wyoming either. And to get people like Brandon Checkey to come back, the Cowboy State will have to do more.
I think we would have to have much more growth in Wyoming, or at least a more diversified economy.
And that's what the state is working on right now.
In Cheyenne, local government has been putting a lot of work behind its Fight the Blight campaign to address a number of abandoned houses and rundown buildings. But efforts to clean up those places have pointed to another problem, a lack of affordable housing. Maggie Mullen has more.
Soon after Cheyenne Mayor Marion Orr took office in 2017, she formed the Fight the Blight Committee. Orr says there are several abandoned properties in the community that have been taken over by all kinds of things.
By squatters and drug dealers and other criminal activity, raccoons, skunks. Nobody wants an abandoned property next to theirs or next to their grandmother's or their mother's.
Orr asked the committee to come up with a list of areas in town that needed to be addressed. At the top of the list, a trailer park in South Cheyenne.
This particular trailer park has not been really held accountable for meeting codes.
Orr says the city was concerned with four trailers in the park after an inspection revealed no connection to water, sewer, gas, or electric services. The trailers weren't always occupied, though. They used to be boarded up. Mayor Orr says last year when the park came under new management, landlord Robert Wink decided to put them to use.
He knew of some people that were in need of homes, and he has a very good heart and thought that perhaps unboarding these structures and allowing individuals and families to move into these units was somehow better than their current situation.
Landlord Robert Wink declined multiple requests from Wyoming Public Radio for an interview. Mayor Orr says because the trailers were not fit for human beings, the city posted notices of code violations on the four trailers. Residents would need to bring their homes up to code, or they would have to find somewhere else to live. But the problem wouldn't be solved if tenants simply left the park.
I think that is absolutely the root of all of this, is the lack of affordable housing here.
That's Lori Kempter. She's executive director of Family Promise, the sole family-only shelter in Cheyenne. According to the Wyoming Business Council, there's a housing shortage in every county in the state. To meet housing demands, Cheyenne, a city of about 64,000 people, would need 12,000 more units. Kempter says people underestimate how many experience homelessness in the area. That's because it looks different in Wyoming. Oftentimes, it's people crashing with family or in motels in their cars.
We serve usually between 15 and 20 families a year with emergency shelter. And the majority of the last 12 months, we have operated with a waiting list upwards of 15 families at a time.
The same goes for the other homeless shelter in Cheyenne, Comia. Executive Director at Comia, Robin Bocanegra, says it is almost always operating at full capacity.
We always end up with this pocket of people that, because of the lack of services, there's just nowhere for them to go.
Bocanegra says those limited services would help people become more self-sufficient.
And it's really hard for us then to find or to make room for new people that are experiencing homelessness because we're full of the folks that we have nowhere to place them.
Comia and Family Promise each receive about $10,000 a year from the city, and some of that money is set to run out in 2019. Bocanegra says there could be more beds and services provided if they had more funding.
$10,000 is nothing. You know, and when I look at how many people we're taking off the streets and trying to help them, that's a community issue.
Both shelters say they would like to see the city take a greater interest in combating homelessness. Mayor Marion Orr sees things differently.
I don't believe that it's up to city government to solve it because it's a much larger social issue and we simply don't have that bandwidth, that capability within city government.
Lori Kempter with Family Promise says the problem is bigger than local government. She says it's Wyoming's weak landlord-tenant laws that cause people to live in the conditions seen at the trailer park in South Cheyenne.
They're not choosing to live in conditions that are not meant for human habitation and that don't have the same basic necessities that you and I have. They're doing that because they have nowhere else to go. And so for a landlord to be able to legally rent places out to people that don't have all of those basic necessities, I mean, that's a really bad law.
It's not clear what will happen to the trailer park in South Cheyenne. Lori Kempter says Family Promise will be stopping by this weekend to hand out flyers with information on community resources. She says if residents do have to vacate in the future, she hopes there's room at the shelter.
Income disparity is one cause for a lack of affordable housing. According to a Bloomberg analysis, Boise, Idaho saw an increase in the wealth gap that catapulted it from number 76 to number 7 for fastest growing wealth disparities in the country. Denver was also ranked high at number 15. Jackson, Wyoming wasn't on the list for fastest growing wealth disparities because it is already the most unequal place in America in terms of income, according to the Economic Policy Institute. Now, the tourism industry is important in Jackson, and it relies on the support of foreign workers. But business owners say difficulties in maintaining a stable workforce don't lie specifically in the visa process. Wyoming Public Radio's Caroline Ballard visited Jackson this past summer to learn more.
Walk around Jackson this summer, and you can expect to see a few things. Lots of people, lots of traffic, and lots of help wanted signs.
I would agree if you walk around, that is the impression. The business owners I've spoken to would say, oh yes, we're always one or two less than what we want.
That's Anna Olson, the president and CEO of the Jackson Hole Chamber of Commerce.
Everyone wants to do a good thing and provide good customer service. So I think there's always that sense of, oh, if we just had one more.
But despite all the signs, Olson says she's heard from businesses that the flow of visa workers has actually been pretty steady this year. That's because Jackson relies heavily on foreign student workers. That's known as the J-1 visa program.
We have a fortunate situation in some ways that our J-1 visa situation has been reliable this year. And talking to some resorts and talking to some individual small town businesses and retailers, they have seen either J-1s returning or new J-1s here. And it hasn't been a great source of concern actually getting people into jobs.
Jackson has moved away from the much more cumbersome H-2B visa program in favor of student workers. And unlike Cody, Jackson has had good luck with those workers. The reasons businesses in Jackson are having trouble finding workers is simple. It's hard to find adequate and affordable housing in Jackson.
What we're hearing is more that the cost of living is one of the biggest challenges. Cost of rents. Rents are rising in Jackson.
According to the Wyoming Economic Analysis Division, the average two-bedroom unfurnished apartment in Jackson costs a little over $1,900 a month. But the other problem is there aren't a lot of available places to rent. Clarine Law runs Town Square Inns, a group of family-owned hotels in Jackson. She says her businesses have been able to hire enough workers this summer, but housing presents a challenge.
I see that if we can address housing, I think it solves a great deal of this problem.
Law says Town Square Inns has been forced to provide employee housing for a fee.
We actually put up about 100 people in the summertime. It's not great. You know, you just dormitory, whatever you can do. But without some sort of housing, it's very difficult to recruit.
Law has been a business owner since 1962. Back then, she says her family did a lot of the work themselves, cleaning rooms, folding laundry, and keeping the books. And when the season was over, they got a break. The tourism season back then was shorter.
There was a time that we used to put a sign up right after Labor Day and say, gone fishing. And I'd take the children down the Snake River and sit on a gravel bank and catch trout. Those days are long past.
That's because there are more visitors year-round, and hiring local workers is not an option. As of May 2018, Wyoming had a 3.7% unemployment rate and the lowest population of any state in the country. Chris Brown, the executive director of the Wyoming Lodging and Restaurant Association, says those two things mean the businesses have to turn to guest worker programs. While the issue of housing is being worked on locally, Brown says immigration reform in Congress is critical.
Our country as a whole hasn't addressed comprehensive immigration reform. There's a real need for foreign workers in the United States. There's simply, there's certain jobs that Americans, there either aren't enough Americans or they're unwilling to fill those jobs.
Hotel owner Clarine Law has spoken to Wyoming's congressional delegation about the need for more avenues for legal immigration. She says she wants a year-round stable workforce. And seeing her employees achieve green cards is part of that.
Sometimes it's taken them as much as 8 years of going and coming legally. That's the kind of program I want to encourage, but I want to shorten the time span. And, to have the proper vetting done and to have them contributing members of the United States of America.
So while adding student employees in Jackson has worked, many businesses admit they would like something a little more stable. But it may take a congressional solution to get there. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Caroline Ballard.
When StoryCorps, a national initiative that records conversations between friends and loved ones, came to Jackson last June, friends Marcela Badillo and Christina Briones sat down to talk about the challenges immigrant families face finding affordable housing in Jackson.
3 years ago, I lost my house, and also I have four kids, and I'm a single mother, and I ended up living in a shelter here because I couldn't find a place to live. Yeah,
and yes.
I really don't know because
it's just hard. I mean, yeah.
But not impossible.
Not impossible, yeah. I get my GED.
Good.
And I get a better job. But housing is still hard. I mean, even if you have if you study, if you have an education, you educate yourself more. And I mean, housing is the big problem. It's hard.
Really hard. And I really don't know what we can do.
Yes. As we as Latinos, we come from other culture. Mexico is different. Here's different. So there's different rights, and they don't know what are our rights and what kind of resources we can have here. So
yes, but I know, I understand that our organizations are working hard to provide affordable housing for families. But I've been noticing that there's not enough.
Yeah, it's hard to qualify because of their status.
Yeah. So if you don't have documents, you don't qualify.
As you say, it's not really easy to have our own home, especially because rents are very, very high. I mean, $2,800 a month, $3,000 a month, that's ridiculous for a house
yeah.
to rent.
Yeah.
Especially when you have kids. Some places don't accept kids. They prefer
dogs or pets instead of kids,
and it's hard because they say, oh, if you have children, sorry, we cannot rent.
And that's discrimination, right?
Yeah, that's discrimination. And also that happened with me when I was pregnant on my third child. My other kids used to be in Mexico. And because I was pregnant, that guy said, oh, you are pregnant. I don't think we can rent a room for you because we don't accept kids.
Kids. They need stability.
Place to live, a safe place to live.
A place where they can call it home and feel safe and feel secure and feel they can develop in a safe environment and everything. After living in Jackson for 10 years, I moved back to Mexico and I didn't like it.
No, I went to Mexico.
When I got to Mexico, it was my town. Hometown, but I got there and I was like, what I'm doing here? This is horrible. I miss Jackson.
Yeah.
And I came back. I was like,
oh, I'm at home.
Yeah, this is home.
Friends Marcela Badillo and Christina Briones talking at StoryCorps in Jackson. Taylor Stagner produced the piece. So what do you get when three ranchers, a school teacher, a real estate agent, and one community development coordinator walk into a bank? In Guernsey, Wyoming, a possible solution to the affordable housing issue. Maggie Mullen reports.
There's not a single traffic light in Guernsey, Wyoming. Only stop signs and two main roads, U.S. Highway 26 and Wyoming Avenue. Close to where the two main streets intersect is Wyoming West Realty.
You're in the right spot.
That's Doug Frederick. He's not a realtor, but a rancher who's lived here his entire life, along with his brother Chuck.
My great-granddad was a soldier, old Fort Laramie, homesteaded up Whalen Canyon in 1879, and we're the fifth generation, so we've been here a long time.
Doug says it's a friendly town.
We used to know everybody, but times are changing.
One of those changes, affordable housing in this small town of about 1,100 people. Right now, it costs an average of $250,000 to buy a house in Guernsey. Bruce Heimbeck says that's what inspired the group to take action.
We decided going in that we weren't going to make money, but we're going to use our money to try and at least make a little bit of a difference.
So over the last few years, the two brothers and four of their peers have met on a regular basis in the back room of Wyoming West Realty to tackle that problem. They call themselves Growing Guernsey, or G2. This was their idea. The six of them would approach the bank and ask for a line of credit. Each would offer $20,000, either land they owned or the cash itself as collateral.
It was definitely an interesting first discussion.
That's Dan Sisson. He's the president at First State Bank in Guernsey.
You know, obviously, if you're in business, usually you're looking to make money, but they were more concerned with helping clean up some areas in town and have some new housing for people.
Sisson says the bank approved a line of credit for $120,000, and G2 used it first to buy an old apartment building at auction. G2 member Bruce Heimbach says the building was cheap because it was basically stripped down to the studs.
We turned around and sold that at our cost to a local contractor who then completely finished it off, and it's now has 10 apartments.
10 rental apartments that are now affordable housing in the community. The group then turned their attention to building a house from scratch. Heimbach says first they had to find the right lot to build on.
Because lot costs are, you know, they're a major factor in your housing, and you can't do affordable housing if you don't have an affordable lot.
Finding an affordable lot was one challenge. Chuck Frederick says finding one that the owner was willing to sell was another.
We still have a lot of vacant lots, but some people are not willing to release them, sell them. Some of them are, no, I'm going to give it to my son or daughter, or we're going to keep it in the family.
Eventually, success. They found a lot, hired contractors, and built their first house.
3 bedrooms, 2 baths, and a 2-car garage. And we sold that first home then. Not a fancy home, but we sold it for about $135,000.
And it was just what Mark and Heather Wilson were looking for.
We had looked at several houses in the area.
But what they'd wanted was out of their price range. But then they saw the house G2 built.
And then this was brand new. And the price of that was huge. So that was like the deciding factor.
G2 built 2 more houses and even fixed up a property downtown that now hosts 3 different businesses. But the last house they built stayed on the market for a while. And then they had trouble finding another lot to buy. Chuck Frederick says it appeared that the market was changing and fewer people were looking to buy houses. They needed something else.
Rental homes are certainly needed in the town. There's very few places to rent.
He says at that point, they decided G2 had run its course. They paid back their loan and pretty much broke even. Now they hope some younger people in the community will pick up the baton. Dan Sisson at First State Bank says he's not sure that will happen anytime soon.
To be honest with you, I think it took a special group of people to come together that, like I said, were willing to, you know, take some risk.
He says he's not holding his breath. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Maggie Mullen.
As we've heard, our region is home to some of the hottest housing markets in the country, but that trend may be slowing down. According to Zillow data, Boise home prices were climbing at a rate of 13 or 14% earlier this year, and now they've slowed down to around 11%. This descent could be due to a number of factors like too many houses on the market, rising interest rates, and home buyers simply being priced out. And that's it for this edition of The Modern West. Check out our website for more stories and episodes. That's themodernwest.org. David Graff produced the episode. Anna Rader is our web editor. The theme music is by Jeff Troxell. And I'm Micah Schweitzer. The Modern West is a production of Wyoming Public Media.